It's the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW. Welcome. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The calls for resignations at City Hall continue, but council members Kevin De Leon and Gil Cedillo are still occupying their seats. The racist language used at a secretly recorded redistricting meeting still fresh in people's minds. Nuri Martinez, the then council president who led that meeting, has resigned, and the city council just yesterday chose to put council member Paul Krikorian in that position. Krikorian represents the eastern San Fernando Valley in places such as Studio City, Valley Village, Toluca Lake, and North Hollywood. And the newly tapped council president is with us right now. Mr. Krikorian, thank you for being on.
It's a great pleasure to be with you.
You tested positive for COVID, right? You're having symptoms.
I did, and it couldn't have happened at a worse time, of course. I managed to get through almost 3 years without a positive test. And
how are you feeling?
I'm much better. Thank you very much.
And I'm glad to hear that. You are taking the helm at the city council at a particularly difficult and tumultuous time, obviously. What kind of approach do you plan to take? I mean, do you see yourself as a different kind of president than, say, Nuri Martinez or even her predecessor, Herb Wesson?
Well, I do. I think at this time in particular, as the city is facing so much pain and reeling from the divisiveness and really hatred that we heard, it's time to have a different kind of leadership that is embracing and collaborative, that brings all communities and points of view together, that welcomes disagreement. And that is the sort of style I've always tried to emulate as a public servant. And certainly I think that's going to be important right now.
How much power should the council president have?
Less. And that's my goal. And here's why. We have 15 council members, each of whom represents over a quarter of a million people who elected them. And our districts include an incredible diversity of priorities, of constituents, of needs. And so each council member has to represent that diversity of interests and concerns. And so I want to have the council be a place that welcomes that and understands that we may not always agree with one another, but we have to work together and find where we can move forward on common ground for the best interests of all 4 million people of Los Angeles. The days when we can think that we represent a certain faction or a certain group or one narrow issue or concern are over. We have to be working together and looking out for one another.
You mentioned 15 council districts, but there is a proposal going forward to increase the number of council members there. Where does that idea stand, do you think, and how big do you think the council might become?
Well, I think it's very important that we move in that direction, and I'm grateful to Councilmember O'Farrell for introducing that motion, which I support. It's important because the smaller the district, the closer the elected representative is to the people and the more responsive the elected representative is. But it's also really important because of our redistricting challenges in Los Angeles. When you heard all of the, you know, horrible things that were being said during that meeting that was recorded, we can't lose sight of the fact of what the purpose of the meeting was. And that was to advantage one group of candidates or elected officials in this case over others, to advantage one race over other races. And we can't have that kind of a system. So the more seats we have, the more we will be able to ensure that everyone's voice is heard and that everyone feels as though they can have access to representation in the city council.
And as you mentioned, the redistricting process, do you support taking that power out of the council's hands for the final say and giving it to an independent commission?
Not only do I support it, over a year ago, I introduced a motion in the city council to create a truly independent redistricting commission along with Councilmember Rahman. The problem with the system we have now is it's the worst of all worlds. We say we have a citizens commission, but it's neither independent nor accountable. So what we need is just like the state has managed to do for its legislative districts, just like the county does, like so many cities around California do. We just need to turn this process over to an independent commission of capable people who aren't connected to government, and let them draw it. And then the election cards can fall as they may then.
Have you heard anything from Gil Cedillo or Kevin De Leon? I mean, there's a lot of pressure for them to resign. If they don't, what can or what should the council do?
I have spoken with Mr. Cedillo at some length and shared with him my thoughts. I heard him out. I made clear to him that I was demanding his resignation, and I would continue to do that. And I saw no other way forward than for him to resign. I have not yet had a chance to speak directly with Mr. De Leon, and I'm looking forward to doing that soon.
Back in June, you spoke at a luncheon hosted by the LA Current Affairs Forum, and you said about this upcoming election, quote, I'm quoting you here, "Trust professionals, trust people who know what the hell they're doing, and even who have some idea of what the function of a city is. Please trust those people, and maybe we have an opportunity to save the city that we all love." What does that mean, trust those people?
In retrospect, maybe those phrases were not as well chosen as they could have been. What I meant was that when we have people who have served in office and developed some experience, that they should know how to operate the levers of government effectively for the people. Now, I didn't mean trust them in terms of ethics or anything else. For that, we need to scrutinize everyone carefully and equally and make sure that that people are doing the job that they're supposed to do. But I think that the members of the city council that I know I've seen them represent their districts effectively. I guess the point of this was, I understand that people in the city are frustrated and angry. And I understand that people across the country are frustrated and angry. I just hope that people will be cautious not to let that frustration and anger lead to a desire to simply tear down institutions rather than trying to rebuild and improve institutions. And right now we have an opportunity before us that's brought to us by this crisis to really get serious about making this a better city council.
And how do you do that as president when there's so much going on and you've got the calls for resignations, you've got even people who have been indicted on corruption charges just in the last few years on that council. So, I mean, how do you instill trust and tell people, hey, look, we've got this under control?
Well, first we do it by example. So we're going to have to send a clear message through our work in the city council that we're going to expect nothing less than integrity and respect. We're going to entertain debate. We're going to let people who disagree with us have a seat at the table. I want to take advantage of the breadth of experience and diversity and priorities and viewpoints of the members of the council. And so the leadership of the council isn't just going to be me. It's going to be all of the council members. And we're going to try to organize this in a way so that authority is diffused. I really do see this as an opportunity for us together as a city to turn a new page, to create a new beginning. But we have to do that, you know, in concert with one another. We have to do that in a way that that shows respect for one another. And I recognize I will make mistakes. I'm sure I'll make plenty of them. I will say things that will come out wrong. I will do things that people will disagree with. I hope that the people of Los Angeles understand, though, that we are all in this together. We've all got to grab an oar. We have to be understanding of one another, and we have to figure out the solutions that are best for the people of the city together.
Paul Krikorian, who represents the Eastern San Fernando Valley, the new president of the LA City Council, LA's acting mayor, and now with symptoms of COVID. Mr. Council President, thank you so much for coming on. A very active time and a busy time. We hope you feel better.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Earn your graduate degree in a flexible online format from University of Southern California and learn from faculty at the top of their fields in areas such as business, health, law, engineering, psychology, communications, and more. Explore your options today at online.usc.edu.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Well, this ongoing scandal at City Hall is casting a spotlight on identity politics, with progressives who want wholesale change on one side of the equation and moderates who are more status quo on the other. But really, what does it all mean? Is there a case for coalition building at LA City Hall, given the city's diverse population? Or will the politics of the day and the issues driving it win out? J. Caspian Kang is a staff writer at The New Yorker. He recently wrote about all this in an article called The LA City Council and the Limits of Identity Politics. And Jay joins us right now. Hi there.
How's it going?
I'm all right. You write that buried within the scandal of the leaked audio is the fact that the council members at the time of the recording, Nuri Martinez, Kevin De Leon, and Gil Cedillo, and the labor leader Ron Herrera, they wanted to create a Latino coalition, and that's something that's necessary in a city like L.A. Why do you think it's necessary? I mean, obviously, there's a very large Latino population here. Why is it necessary to build coalitions, though, behind the scenes?
Well, I don't know if it's absolutely necessary, and I certainly would not say that it's necessary in the way that they went about it, right? But one thing that I did think was true upon hearing those tapes is that, like, this is basically the history of local politics, not just in Los Angeles, but, you know, in the United States. Like, you know, there's Irish coalitions, there were Black coalitions, you know, this is all going back to the 19th century, and that, you know, like what we're dealing with is not something that's new. And that the question underneath all of that is basically, if you have a city that is half Latino, right, and that there is an underrepresentation on a very powerful city council, and that the reality of politics in the city is racial coalition politics, which I think everyone would agree in Los Angeles, you know, that is a very powerful force. These types of doing politics in this sort of way is almost inevitable. Now, I think that, you know, my criticism of it is that, you know, perhaps it shouldn't be, you know, perhaps there are other ways to go about doing politics. But, you know, I think that Nuri Martinez, Gil Cedillo, Kevin De Leon, they're responding in the most charitable way that you can think about. What they were doing was that they were trying to consolidate power for, you know, people of their identity. Now, you know, one thing I point out in the piece is that, you know, they seem to have a very limited definition of who fits into their identity and who doesn't, you know, but, you know, I think that that was sort of the impetus for the way that they're behaving.
You write in the story, quote, "Talk of solidarity might sound nice to everyone, but Los Angeles is, in reality, a collection of ethnic economies that are in constant competition with one another." How do you govern a city like that? And are there other examples in the country, like maybe New York or, you know, bigger cities that have these, as you say, ethnic communities?
I don't think that there is a place other than Houston that's quite like Los Angeles, where it is quite a segregated, where immigrant communities are quite this insular, and also, I guess, like, can build their own economies. Like, you know, think about like the Koreatown, parts of Glendale. LA is not the only place where these types of communities exist, but I think it is the one place where the politicization and the separation between them sort of make up the actual character of the city.
I mean, ethnic economies and ethnic communities are one thing, but there's also, you know, a political ideology that goes along with this as well. Like some folks on the council are progressive, and we certainly have seen that with the Nithya Ramans and Eunices Hernandez, who was just elected in Gil Cedillo's district. So you have people right way far to the left, and I wonder, you know, do they, those younger and more progressive politicians, see power differently, and how do they represent, you know, these ethnic economies?
I think so. And but I think that if you asked any of them, you know, I've had conversations with all people that you just mentioned, and all of them say, do not discount the importance or even the, you know, the need to sort of appeal to people's identity, to understand that people are coming from countries or they're coming from backgrounds that are important to them, right? And that there is an issue of underrepresentation for certain populations. You know, one of the things that was pointed out in those tapes that, you know, I actually thought was an interesting point that they made, it, you know, aside from all the sort of racism and corruption that was going on, was that, you know, they talked about Koreatown in Los Angeles, how Koreatown has always been at least half Latino, maybe more, you know, in the past more. And that, you know, like that population is never really mentioned when it comes to Koreatown. That population is not even really recognized. It is the Korean population within that enclave that, you know, gets the signs, the sort of, you know, a lot of the commercial real estate, everything. And that, that I think that understanding that will lead people to want more representation, like that is just a fundamental part of politics, especially in Los Angeles. Now, I think that they would also argue that it's important to make appeals across racial lines, right? Like it's important to think of people as renters, right? Like, and say that we have shared interests as renters. And, you know, that is a different form of politics, I think, and a different form of trying to build coalitions than like what we saw with like Nuri Martinez, Gil Cedillo and Kevin DeLeon. Although, like, you know, honestly, the irony here is that, like, I think if you asked anyone 6 months ago if Kevin DeLeon and Gil Cedillo were like progressive, I think most people would say yes. You know, Gil Cedillo is endorsed by Bernie Sanders. You know, like these are not like centrist Democrats for the most part.
Latinos, Jay, make up about 50% of the population in LA. They certainly have a plurality, if not a majority. They don't have that kind of representation, though, on the city council. And now, since Nuri Martinez has resigned, there are even fewer council members representing that demographic. So has this Latino coalition, the one that the council members really wanted at first, has it been dismantled? Is there a way to reassemble it?
Well, I don't, you know, I think there's a hopeful case for it. And there's a, you know, I think that there's a sobering case for it. I think the hopeful case for it is that, you know, because the question of representation, you know, is not one that is really contested here, right? Even in the backlash or people's, or in the resignations or the protests, like nobody is questioning the idea that, you know, a city that is half Latino should have more than 4 seats on the city council. And that this might reinvigorate people to try and bring in politicians who might have a broader understanding so that whatever coalitions that are built between the Latino politicians would not be, you know, by definition at odds with, say, a Black coalition, which is, you know, some of the stuff that we heard in those tapes. I think that the sobering version of it is that, you know, people are going to be very suspicious of after these tapes. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be looking for any type of corruption. And that I think that the relationships that Latino politicians, even ones who had like nothing to do with any of this, that they will be having with other communities, right? Whether Black communities or Asian communities or, you know, or white communities, that, you know, I think that it's going to be a little bit difficult. Like there's going to be a stink that hovers. And I think that, you know, both things might happen at the same time, but I do think that like there's definitely like there's a bad scenario in all of this too.
Jay Caspian Kang, staff writer at The New Yorker. Jay, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Hey, thanks so much.
Back now with more of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Fall is here. Not that you can tell with the blazing heat today. But temperatures notwithstanding, fall does mean one thing. Football, specifically high school football. So let's get it started.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoked, get it started, get it started, get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get it started.
The East LA Classic is a rivalry that goes back decades, Roosevelt versus Garfield High Schools. And this Friday, they'll be battling it out on the field at the Coliseum, with a halftime show unlike any other high school halftime show. Will I Am, member of the music group The Black Eyed Peas, and a Boyle Heights native, is bringing his band and talents to the field, promising to, quote, up the awesomeness of the game. And he is here right now to talk more about it. Hey, Will.
Hey, what's up?
What's up with you? Talk a little bit about growing up in Boyle Heights. Was the Roosevelt-Garfield game, the so-called classic, was that a big deal?
Yeah, the Roosevelt-Garfield East LA Classic was our Grammys way before I was even hip to the Grammys. It was the Super Bowl way before the Super Bowl had halftime shows and a spectacle. It was our neighborhood's tradition as Eastsiders, east of the 5 freeway. You know, there's a lot of pride in our community, and it's rich of culture, Black culture, obviously Mexican culture. And my upbringings in Boyle Heights and Estrada Courts, the projects there, was a beautiful upbringing. It was love, cultural appreciation. And it's the reason why Black Eyed Peas is so multicultural, because of, you know, that melting pot, being immersed by mariachi culture, cumbias, rancheros, regional Mexican music, whether it's Los Bukis or Juan Sebastian. That was my childhood. And it's why the Black Eyed Peas music is so open-minded and multifaceted, because that's just the community I swam in growing up. And my uncle played football for Roosevelt. He went to East LA College, where the Classic usually is. He attended USC and was a Trojan, where the Classic is this year. He went off to play professional football for the NFL, for the Falcons, and ended his career being an LA Ram. And he's doing the coin toss this year, being a East Sider, Boyle Heights, local hero in the athletics. And I'm funding and producing the halftime show, local Boyle Heights, East LA, Estrada Courts, you know, music success that has taken that perspective of East LA and the melting pot of culture around the world. You know, we went everywhere. Everywhere on the planet that you could think of, Black Eyed Peas was there. But coming out of Boyle Heights and now doing this halftime show, I say this one is more important than the one we did when we played this Super Bowl halftime show.
How much has Boyle Heights changed since you lived there?
Boyle Heights is undergoing significant change right now because the gentrification that's happening with downtown's Arts District, and folks that see Boyle Heights as a thriving community and rich of culture are pushing folks that have been living there forever out. And so it's changing for the better. Unfortunately, it's changing, and folks that have been there have to change, and that shouldn't happen. There should be some type of, like, affordable living clause as neighborhoods improve and crime reduces, that folks that had to endure the hardships can still live and enjoy the transformation. That's the reason why my foundation, the work that I've been doing for 12 years, upskilling and getting people prepared for a technological tomorrow. I started with 65 kids. Now we serve about 12,000 students across LA with robotics programs, computer science programs, and college prep programs. So I'm really proud of the work that the foundation has been doing to prepare folks for when communities become altered and the price of living is unbearable, where they can fill jobs that are unfilled, that pay real career earning wages, but then at the same time, they have the skill set to unearth new industries and companies and products with their skill set.
What keeps you connected to the community, Will? What keeps you coming back and wanting to help out?
What keeps me connected to the community is my heart. That community made me. And there's no amount of success that could take me away from the importance that community has had in my life.
Who are you rooting for in the game?
Well, that's not fair. Roosevelt. But I love Garfield. Oscar De La Hoya is a champion, another East Side champion. And I love the work that he's done for the community as well. And he went to Garfield.
But we have you checked off as Roosevelt. He's not going to fight you for that, is he?
I dare him to. Just kidding. I dare you to go to the ring with me.
Well, I wish you both the best of luck. May both teams get something out of this game. And thank you for what you're doing in the community as well. Will I Am, Boyle Heights native and also a member of the super group, the Black Eyed Peas. Will, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's going to do it for us right now. Back to Boyle Heights we go on the next Greater LA for another installment in our series Born and Raised, looking at neighborhoods that are very different from the ones people grew up in decades ago. You heard Will I Am talking about how Boyle Heights and East LA have changed over the years. It really has. Higher priced housing, fancy coffee shops, and the loss of the historical neighborhood appeal. We'll take you there tomorrow. We'll take you there on the next Greater LA. What's going on in your neighborhood, by the way? Let us know at kcrw.com/GLA. Share your thoughts with us and, of course, subscribe to the podcast as well, or just grab the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Michael Stark, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Vogel, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl. All had hands on the show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and attention. Have a great day.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.